Attention, listeners. Do you ever find yourself struggling to decide what to watch on a Saturday night when you're in the mood for horror? Or perhaps you're trying to round out your own horror film education. In either case, I'm sure you'll be able to make some great discoveries in my 10x10 horror watch list, featuring a breakdown of the 10 favorite horror movies from 10 renowned horror directors. We did a deep dive of the favorite horror movies from directors including Guillermo del Toro, Ari Aster, Jordan Peele, Quentin Tarantino, James Gunn, Rob Zombie, Martin Scorsese, and many, many more. Here you'll find a collection of each director's favorite horror movies, along with quotes about what they appreciated about the films, all in an easy-to-reference PDF that you can download absolutely free. Featuring a mix of well-worn classics and deep cuts, hopefully you'll discover some overlooked gems and look at old classics through new lenses. Download the 10x10 horror watch list for free by visiting nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. That's nicktaylor.com/horrorguide. Welcome to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. As always, each episode of the Nick Taylor Horror Show explores how today's horror filmmakers are getting their movies made, while deconstructing their methods and career strategies into practical insights that you can use on your own horror filmmaking journey. Hey everyone, back with another monthly episode of The Howl, a new concept where me and my co-host Adam Cruz summarize and discuss the past month's news in horror. We also share what we've watched recently and just generally nerd out on all things horror. Our goal with The Howl is to catch listeners up with all the horror news that they may have missed from the past month in a fun conversational format. If you want a quick read version of The Howl sent directly to your inbox every month, then sign up for my monthly newsletter at nicktaylor.com/The Howl. So to recap, The Howl is about catching you up on what's happening in horror, delivering some solid movie recommendations, and hopefully entertaining you at the same time. These episodes also have a video component, so feel free to check us out at the Nick Taylor Horror Show YouTube channel as well. So without further ado, here is me, Nick Taylor, in conversation with Adam Cruz on a new monthly segment we're calling The Howl. Howl number 4.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. We're making this a habit.
We did it.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, big month for horror. Every month I'm like, damn, there's a lot of horror news. But this month, damn, there was a lot of horror news.
Yeah,
which we'll obviously get to. But what have you been watching?
The Omen.
Okay.
I finally caught the Omen. Last episode you had watched it.
Yeah, I had watched it, and I was talking about how it was the same plot as Immaculate.
As Immaculate, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, who would have thought? But it was great. I actually really liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
It made me want to go back and I've seen the first Omen, the first Omen,
yeah.
A bunch of times. It made me want to go back and rewatch it. So my wife and I went back, we watched that one, we watched the second one, and we started the third one.
We had to
pause it. I never saw the second one. But anyway, I want to go back to the first. I love how they really, you can tell they intentionally really did try to make it a true prequel.
Right.
There was no like bullshit. They were making stuff up or whatever, just trying to like shoe fit. Well, I guess they did shoe fit, but it made sense. They really did. Like when I watched, I was like, oh, like they actually seamlessly went right into it and they went back through a lot of the story, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. I heard from some people that there were some elements that are not accurate, that they remade in this version, that there's some inconsistencies.
Okay.
Like apparently the whole idea of Damien is he was born to a jackal. He was not born to a human mom. So they changed that a little bit, which I mean, I feel like that had to be updated anyway. That's not exactly, you know, realistic.
Yeah.
But did you notice any other inconsistencies between the two? Because you went deep into the mythology. You saw the first three Omens.
I did, yeah. We stopped in the third one, so I want to finish it. But not so much that I could call out. I'd have to watch them again to really see. I have to watch the first Omen, the new one, again,
yeah,
to really see. But the Jackals is a good call I didn't really think about. I kind of saw it as all the other people, you know, in the convent were obviously all a part of the whole thing, and they were all, you know, quote-unquote the Jackals as well.
Yeah.
Because they talk about how there's multiple ones. It's not just, like, one
right
that births him. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it. You should have seen it by now. So, spoiler alert. Here we go. I loved the idea that the Catholic Church was behind it. And they're like, we need to bring the devil back into the conversation every so often so that people stay really beholden to the church. I was like, God damn. It's so corrupt.
That's dark shit.
Really dark. Dude. It makes sense, though, in the idea of like light versus dark, and you need the darkness for the light to really stand out. I was like, damn. I thought that was really good writing. It felt like they took this very seriously as a new entry in this franchise, which I really, really liked. Like, they really thought it through. The mythology was really solid. A lot of really good kills. A lot of sophistication, though, at the same time. Like, I really liked it. I hope that this is a new franchise and that we get more of these, because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think they're supposed to be making another one already.
Oh, yeah?
That's the plan.
Oh, that's good.
But yeah, then I watched the second one. The second one I really loved. I actually was very surprised at how good it was. I thought they were going to not be very good. And then the third one with Sam Neill is good so far. We had to pause it, and then we haven't gone back to it yet.
Oh, yeah. So I haven't seen any of the sequels. Yeah. So the sequels are good. The
second one's good. It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
It's got a nice twist at the end. Damien, at that point, I think he's like maybe 13, 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
So it's cool because in the first one, he is not talking, right? He's just a little ass kid.
Right.
He's like grown up now. So you get to see him as his personality. And he's basically off to almost like a military school.
And oh, well.
And he's with now his uncle who's taking him on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's him and his cousin who's about the same age.
Okay.
So that's really cool because then he starts to spiral. But then he's got people telling him that he's basically the son of the devil. So he starts reading the Bible and learning a little bit more about himself too.
Oh, damn.
And then without spoiling, because I want you to watch now, I think it's worth
watching.
This
is two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then shit goes crazy toward the end. Like it starts.
Okay.
It's really cool because at that point they bring back, if you remember, Bugenhagen. Is that his name? He's the archaeologist in the first one. He's
okay.
He's the one that when the priest knows what's going on, he goes to the dad. The dad thinks he's like fucking crazy. He tells him to get the fuck out of here. He's like, you need to go see Bugenhagen. And he's in like fucking, I don't know, somewhere in the Middle East or some shit.
Okay.
He's an archaeologist. He's like, he's the only one that can actually tell you what to do to get rid of him.
Okay.
When shit starts popping off, dad goes and flies to this fucking place. Bugenhagen's the one that gives him the daggers to actually
kill
him.
To take care of
him. To kill him in the church.
Yeah.
Anyway, I say all that because the second one starts off where they reintroduce Bugenhagen from the start. So it's done really well. And the whole point is that at this point, Bugenhagen is the only person that knows what's going on. So all this stuff is in the newspapers, like shit that's going on, but he's the only one that actually knows like the truth of what's going on. And to try to help, stop it from there. But
that sounds cool. All
it's right. really cool.
You're making me want to go, check out the rest of the franchise.
It was good. Cool. Yeah.
What
about you?
I saw Godzilla Minus One, which is on Netflix right now. It's fantastic. Have
phenomenal.
You seen it?
Phenomenal. Yeah, I saw it twice in the theaters.
So fucking good. I'm really bummed I didn't see it in the theaters.
I saw it three times, actually.
Now damn.
Because they did a re-release in black
and white.
See
the black and white version?
Yeah. So I saw the two. I saw the first one regular, and then I saw it in like a 4D.
Oh, wow.
Which was like...
4DX, is that when the seats shake and they squirt water at you?
Yeah, a little
shit.
Fucking...
They still do that bullshit?
Yeah, fucking OD. Bro, I didn't like it. Yeah, it was really uncomfortable. At first, I was like, whoa, this is cool. But then I was like, this is too much. Like,
it's too much. Yeah. The only time I thought the 4DX actually worked well was I saw Hellfest, the Gregory Plotkin movie that came out a few years ago. There's a scene where somebody gets their head cut off and then you get a little squirt of water. So it's like the blood simulating hitting you. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But then they're like flashing lights and stuff. Like, I don't know. Not a good idea.
I didn't surprise they did Hellfest in 4DX. That's
pretty
interesting.
I saw the Blair Witch remake too. And there was just like the seats move and shake. And it's just like, this is unnecessary.
It's
just invest in better sound.
Yeah.
Put your money in there. Yeah.
And Godzilla Minus One, there's a lot that takes place in the water. So there's a lot of fucking water that'd be spraying to your face and shit. Like it's fucking unnecessary.
I love the water sequences. The movie is Jaws for a while. It's three guys on a boat trying to catch a predator. And it's like, it totally is Jaws for a good portion of the movie.
It is my favorite Godzilla so far.
Me too.
It is probably, I would say, the best. It, like, what they did with the characters, it's so much better than what they've done with anything else because the main character, I already forgot his name now. I mean, you're with him the entire time. He goes through so much trauma.
Yeah.
You get to follow him along this journey, and he's the one who's thinking that he's, like, trying to get revenge. You know, he's constantly trying to have these battles, and he loses every fucking time.
Yeah.
You know? I thought that was so cool because you're constantly going through this journey with him, and it's really shitty what he goes through. There's a lot of fucked up shit that happens.
Yeah. No, they really shed light on it. I mean, the whole origin of Godzilla is a metaphor for the atomic age and the devastation that Japan went through post-World War II. I think this is the only Godzilla movie that's taken place during World War II that really is about the origin of Godzilla, I think. I mean, this. I think I looked this up. There's been 36 Godzilla movies made.
I've seen fucking five.
Me too. Yeah, it's like this, Shin Godzilla, all the ones that Adam Wingard are putting out, and the really goofy one that took place in New York in the 90s with Matthew Broderick.
I never saw
But I saw one. Like Mothra. I saw a couple odd ones here and there. Makes me want to go back and watch like some of those classic ones.
I would love to.
Yeah, but this one really dealt with the origin story of it and really deeply compassionate portrait, and the guy was a kamikaze, but yeah. he didn't. Fly awesome. Into, and he was dealing with that survivor's guilt and the shame of that. It was very deep.
Because that was a real thing, too, for the kamikaze pilots. If you came back home, like, you were shunned.
Right.
That was a big deal if you didn't fucking kill yourself.
It's all this stuff you'd never think about in this day and age, you know. It really, really dealt with some very heavy topics in a very respectful way. It didn't feel exploitive, despite being a monster movie, but I thought it was a really beautiful way to really pay homage to what Godzilla is really about, which is atomic energy.
Agreed.
Yeah. So loved that.
I'll segue that into, I saw the new Godzilla vs. Kong.
Oh, yeah?
As well.
I haven't seen that yet. I really wanted to.
It's very disappointing.
Really?
Yeah. I really liked Godzilla King of Monsters.
What was the last one? It was Godzilla Kong, or was that Godzilla King of Monsters?
Okay. Yeah. That was cool because there's a whole, if you haven't seen that one.
I saw the last one, which I thought was Godzilla versus Kong. And I saw the one before that. The two ones that Adam Wingard did previous to this one, I saw.
I saw the one with Cranston also. I think you're right. I think it was Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah.
I think Godzilla King of the Monsters was before that.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's one. I really like the one. Godzilla versus Kong was cool because Mechagodzilla comes out.
Oh,
yeah. Remember that? That was cool. Because he fucks them up. he comes out fucking out the gates and fucks them up.
Was that a Jaeger, technically, or a kaiju? Was it like a mechanized, like a robotic thing that somebody's inside
I think that's what happened. They had someone actually controlling it like that. And okay. There's a Mechagodzilla in the like originals. Like,
right. He was like from outer space.
But I don't know the story of it. So I really like that too. But the new one was just like really disappointing.
Really?
It was like... Yeah, and I just saw today, it's like the highest grossing one for however fucking...
They do well, man. I got a thing for kaiju movies. I really do. Yeah. Pacific Rim is like one of my favorites.
Me too.
Oh, it's so Me too. Fucking awesome.
Yes.
The sequel was disappointing because it was all Jaegers, no kaijus. I was like psyched to watch it, but it has very much a straight-to-video vibe, you know?
So I never saw the second one.
I started watching it and I just couldn't finish it because it was like, it didn't have the touch of Guillermo del Toro.
Mm.
And it was all Jaegers, no kaiju.
Yeah.
At least as far as I got, which was, I think, about halfway through. And I could be wrong, so don't, you know, slam me on the internet if I'm wrong about this. But I don't like me some kaijus.
Yeah.
You know, big-ass monsters.
Yeah. I love, like, I've learned, like, in my time, like, I love scale. I like shit that's, like, it makes you feel tiny.
Yeah.
Did you ever play Shadow of the Colossus?
No.
Video game? That game, that was PS2. They redid it a few years ago for PS5 or PS4. Okay. It's a beautiful fucking game. It is like, it's like boss fights.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
Every single one, like, the story's like very, it's a little ambiguous, but it's kind of straightforward in a sense. But the whole point is like, there's like 10 different colossi. Yeah. They're huge. And every single one is almost like a puzzle. You have to climb them. You have to find their pressure point, things that their weakness,
that's cool.
Their points, but they're all way different. Some of them are like flying. Some of them are in the water.
That sounds awesome.
So it's like, you know, it's like when you're playing a Zelda game and you make it to a boss, you got to figure the shit out.
Right.
It's basically one after another. So you got one, you got to kill it, and then you got to, you know, find the next one and then just defeat it. But it's like, you're not spending a ton of time going through the game. Anyway, the point is like you're fighting these giant fucking things and you're this little guy on a horse. He's got to fucking, you know, run around and shit. All that stuff, man. I love that kind of stuff. Like the destruction and just like when you feel like, you're fucking insignificant. Like,
yeah,
it's huge.
That's cool. I'm not gonna check that game out. I'm not a big gamer, but I'll check that out. Nice. What else did you see?
I saw Strangers Chapter One.
Yep, I saw it too. What'd you think?
Didn't like it.
Didn't like it.
No.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I'm going to bitch a little bit here.
Okay.
I know you said, you know, we got to keep it. No, but I, right. What I will say is I think home invasion movies, what's great about them is like, they're like real scenarios. Like shit can happen, right? Like I think when you're put in that setting, I think in order for these movies to work in terms of like sitting on the edge of your seat and feeling like you're actually like, you know, scared.
Yeah.
The characters need to make decisions that you would make.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem with all these movies is that they don't do anything. They right. don't, they're fucking walking through the house. Like
they always go upstairs instead of out the front door.
Right. You know, and every time. It's the cliche stuff. And there's a place for that, right?
Yeah.
Like we need some of that stuff of course. Sometimes. But when like every single thing is like, no one would do that. Like you're scared, but like, you're not like, you need to be in fight or flight mode. This is like a movie. Like you're not fighting and you're not flighting. Like there's no, you're kind of just like, I don't know. You know, you're just kind of like, you know, and I don't know. That's the stuff that really like angers me about those movies because yeah. I want to like them. And I just felt like this movie, and I made a lot of notes and I didn't even write them here, but, yeah, I just remember there were a lot of like, and it's the same like jump scares.
Right.
It's like they're walking and then what's happening. They were just doing shit that like didn't make any sense. I remember the guy, they tried to paint him as kind of tough, but like, no, kind of a little bitch at first.
Right.
But then he tries to be tough and it's like, it just didn't work. There was a lot of stuff for me that just kind of clashed.
Mm. Yeah. No, I hear all of that. I still enjoyed it and I still was very uncomfortable the whole movie. I was still really nerve-wracked by it. There were a couple, it was very much a templated sort of movie. It was almost identical to the original, which I feel like it was kind of a remake or a requel or a, I'm not even sure. But they're very, very structurally similar. So I would have liked a little bit of a deviation. That being said, I still thought it was effective, you know, once you get over some of the trappings of that genre. But yeah, I was uncomfortable the whole movie. And I was like, oh yeah, this is actually effective. This is working. I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it. It wasn't perfect. And I like that there's a to be continued element, spoiler alert, kind of, not really. But that the movies are going to start connecting more. Because the last one, The Strangers Pray at Midnight, was very much its own sort of autonomous thing. It didn't connect to the original Strangers. The one that came out, and I didn't even know when the Liv Tyler one came out. But yeah, I think they need to do some different things. And I think they probably will. But I feel like they wanted to reignite the franchise and just like, let's return to basic principles. And yeah, it was all like, we'd seen a lot of it before, but I still found it effective.
Was there anything that you really liked about it?
I don't want to spoiler alert this, but there's one shock that happens that involves a shotgun where you're like, oh shit. There was one. Do you know what I'm talking about?
When he gets, the guy gets the gun?
Well, no, I don't know how to say this without like ruining it, without spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, let's.
Okay, fine, spoiler alert. You guys can just skip over this because it'll be really quick. When he accidentally shoots the owner of the Airbnb, I was like, fuck. That was like my heart sank. It was good at really grabbing you by the throat. You know, I thought it was effective. It was, for what it was, you definitely get your money's worth. I'll put it that way.
I remember that part too, and I remember liking that. That was the one thing I actually think I did like from the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I just have these notes here I'm looking at, and it's just, I'm not even going to go through them.
Okay.
Just little things, like when you're in the woods, and again, it's fine for like a Jason movie.
Okay.
But if you're playing, again, this is, to me, this should be like a more reality kind of movie. Like, if I'm in the woods and there's like a whole scene there where I think somebody comes out of nowhere and like, I think it's when the guy is like, he's got the gun pointed at one of the strangers.
Yeah.
One of the other ones comes out of nowhere, but you don't like hear any, like that's not realistic. Like it's just, again, it's fine for a Jason movie. If someone just, you know, all of a sudden gets decapitated in the middle, right. Like, all right, where the fuck did they come from? But
yeah, it's kind of stuck between worlds. It's like a slasher movie and a home invasion movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it worked. But no great innovation, but I enjoyed it.
And that's okay.
Perfectly solid night. Was that yours or mine? That was yours. I saw Tarot. Did you see Tarot?
I didn't, but you kind of told me that you told me you saw it. But
I did. It's like, again, it's no big revelation in horror. And it clearly remixes elements of Final Destination, 13 Ghosts, and Talk to Me. But it's fun and it works and it had me from beginning to end. And it's PG-13, so you can watch it with your kids. The monsters are awesome.
Really?
Really cool monsters in it. Like, I like a good creature feature. There was a bunch of different monsters in this movie.
Really?
Kind of, yeah. Okay. Just like 13 Ghosts sort of vibe. They're beautifully designed. A lot of practical effects. And yeah, I mean, the characters could have been a little more dimensionalized, but it's like, who fucking cares? Like, it was just fun. And it's just, yeah, sometimes you just want some good popcorn fare, and Taro totally delivers on that.
That one I actually did see, saw the trailers, and I was like, I can tell it's like a more commercial kind of movie, but I was for like, sure. it looked okay.
Yeah. If I was like 13 and saw it, it'd be like my favorite movie.
Cool.
You know, it's just good. I like that there's more gateway stuff coming out for this next generation of horror fans. And this feels like a solid entry. Yeah. You can find flaws with it, but like, who cares?
Yeah.
Mythology was cool. Story was cool. Yeah. Had a lot going for it. I enjoyed it.
Cool.
Definitely enjoyed it.
Definitely going to check that one out then.
Yeah.
I think it's streaming now. I think I saw it on something.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, paid $10 for it.
Yeah. Worth it then.
Yeah, totally worth it. What else you got?
I think we talked about it a little bit last time, but I finally saw Lisa Frankenstein.
Okay.
Which I really liked.
Yeah?
Yeah. I watched it. My wife joined me too. She kind of joined like halfway and it took her a second, but then she liked it. And then I ended up putting it on again because that first time I wasn't giving it my full attention.
Yep.
Watching it the second time, I really liked it. Yeah, it's just fun. Just
yeah.
Very fun movie.
Yeah.
Well done.
Like another kind of gateway-ish, although I think it is rated R.
Probably. I could see it being rated R.
Yeah, I think there's some violent parts, but
it's pretty bubbly. Like,
yeah.
It's like a, take this how you will. It's to me, it's like almost like a girly movie. It's a very like,
for sure.
You know, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's got a different feel.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it'll definitely be popular as like a kind of teenage cult hit for sure.
Yeah. Teenage is probably like a better,
I'll
just say girly, but yeah.
I saw Watchers and I watched the whole movie thinking it was M. Night Shyamalan, but it was actually his daughter. And I finished it and I was like, God, this is one of the better M. Night Shyamalan movies after like Signs. Because, I mean, I think he's a phenomenal director, but there was something about this movie I actually really, really liked. The mythology was cool. The movie had me from beginning to end.
It looks
cool.
You
watch the trailer, and you're, like, not really sure what to make of it. I don't like really elaborate rules and laws and this world building that is just so elaborate that it kind of takes you out of reality. But the trailer made me think that was going to be the case with this movie, but it wasn't. It was a really cool idea, some fun twists and turns. Beautifully shot.
Cool.
Beautifully shot. Ishana Knight Shyamalan was the director. And I think, it was her directorial debut. And she's the daughter of M. Night.
Did she write it too?
I don't know. I think so.
I thought she did.
I think she wrote it with her dad. I might be wrong about this.
Okay.
But it was really good. Really good. And kind of like when you see Brandon Cronenberg's work, you can tell whose son he is. But he still very much has his own, world building and own sensibility. You can tell that she is his daughter, but she still has a very distinctly different sense of storytelling, and even some aesthetics are different, but you can tell where she learned how to make movies, which is cool. I really like seeing that because I'm sure to one degree, if you're the child of a filmmaker, you probably want to like really distinguish your voice so you don't seem like you're in their shadow. But at the same time, I think there is something nice about observing these kids who do basically absorb the sensibilities of their parents who make movies at such a high level as Cronenberg and M. Night Shyamalan, but do take it to their own place.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to Brandon Cronenberg, Ishana totally does that. So yeah, I liked it a lot. It's great. It's great in the theater too.
I feel like it's inevitable that you're surrounded, you grew up in that world, right? And I think it's also inevitable. I'm sure if they, like I said, maybe they wrote it together, there's probably pieces of it. And if she did it on her own, I'm sure she had some, at least, guidance along the way.
Yeah, for sure.
And not to say he wrote a huge part of it, but like you're an artist too, even as a musician. Like you can still take an idea from someone and be like, oh, I didn't even think about that,
right,
and still run with it. So all those things, I think, especially as legacies are passed down, actors and all those things too, you're going to take some of those things and it's on you to make it yours, right?
100%, yeah.
But that's cool.
Yeah, and she totally did make it her own. Yeah. Awesome. What else you got?
Well, I saw Night of the Demons.
Oh, what took your ass so long?
10, 30 years, 40 years. I don't know. It just, I've always seen the cover.
Yeah.
Angela on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
I've just never, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, some of these movies just escape you.
Yeah, I kind of went on a tear this month, and I just, like, put older shit on, some things that I hadn't seen. I'm adding it to my list to talk about because I really fucking like that movie.
Yeah.
It has become, it's kind of what Return of the Living Dead did for me maybe like 10 years ago because I had never seen that movie.
Okay.
And that became a movie that I'm like, oh my God, I love this movie so much.
You just love Linnea Quigley. That's what this is about.
Her too.
Yeah.
What are the odds, right? But Night of the Demons, man, I was just like pleasantly surprised at how like good it was. It's so like campy, like the dialogue is so shitty sometimes. And it's just like that classic 80, but like, I don't know. The story is so cool. I love that they're stuck in the house. I love the lore. I love that they are surrounded by the wall. Like, there's just so much cool shit that happens.
Yeah, and the demon effects looked awesome.
That's the other thing that I really, really liked. And that's your boy, Steve
Uncle
Johnson.
Uncle Steve, yeah, yeah. No, he nailed it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And the reason why I watched it was because I actually put on Fright Night. And I've seen Fright Night a bunch of times, but like, it's so good. But it was one of those, I think it was on Prime, and, you know, and it's like, oh, if you like that, you'll like this. And I was like, you know, and it was a day that I was like, it was when I was sick fucking last week.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, fuck it. I'm like, I took the day off and I was like, I'm just going to like put this movie on. And like I said, pleasantly surprised. And then I was like, oh, Steve Johnson. And that's your boy you're doing your whole documentary on, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have a lot of knowledge of this stuff, the industry. I know Tom Savini. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's
right.
So I'm learning more. I learned a lot from you. And now I'm seeing like his name fucking everywhere. And I'm like, oh, this dude is like all over this shit, right?
A lot. He did a lot of classics, did a lot of big movies, but a lot of like the little small ones that have cult followings, like Brain Scan and, you know, obviously Fright Night and things like that. But
I love it. The looks, like the makeup is just.
Yeah, he's got so a very signature aesthetic, you know, he's got a lot, there's like he's a little bit inspired by cartoons, like Tex Avery cartoons, at least that was Slimer. His other big thing is asymmetry, like a lot of things are not symmetrical to make things look scary. He explained like the angles make things more scary. I think it's like acute angles, if you have creature designs, and he's going to listen to this and make fun of me because I'm probably getting part of it wrong. It's something about like the angle of features. Like it's all about like acute angles.
Mm, like hard.
Like things, right? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Like really sharp angles make things scarier. Like there's a little science behind it too.
I can see that. Yeah. What I really liked about that too is like the demons, they don't just turn and they just look like that. Like they progress. Like they change. Like they look different.
Yeah, like
each one's each one has maybe 2, 3, 4 different looks.
Right.
That change throughout. That's actually probably including afterward, like they all burn and shit too, and then they're still coming. But yeah, absolutely loved it. I loved it so much. I watched the remake too, just to see if I can fucking compare.
I never saw the remake.
It was okay. There's a lot of people in it too. Shannon Elizabeth's in it. The kid from Terminator. What's his name?
Eddie Furlong.
Yeah. He's in it. So is the girl. I forgot her name. The girl from Freddy vs. Jason, the main girl.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I don't know her name.
She's in it too. It's okay. They added their own kind of lore and they kind of changed the story, which, you know, I don't hate on it. I don't mind it. It was okay. But after watching the original one, I was just like, well, just curious to compare. The effects were really cool at times and there were some really cool parts. They actually replicated the, lipstick.
Did they?
But they took it a step further. Can I spoil it for you?
Yeah, do it.
So Shannon Elizabeth is the one who plays Angela.
Okay.
And I forgot, I think it's a different girl who plays, or I guess would be Linnea Quigley's character. But she does it, and then she starts reaching for, like, her crotch.
Uh-oh.
And then they start showing, and then all of a sudden, all this blood starts pouring out, and the fucking lipstick comes out of her fucking vagina.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You see her vagina?
No, they don't show it like that.
They don't, okay.
It's not a porno.
I just making sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow. But it's pretty, the way they like, I saw, I'm like, graphic. All right, like, you know, but yeah, all the blood was just really.
Well, good for them for trying to top it because it's something hard to top.
Yeah. I think to take it that step further, definitely for me, it worked, but overall, okay.
Oh, nice. In a Violent Nature. Saw that. I know you saw it too. Oh, you got thoughts, huh? You got thoughts. Yeah. I saw it in a theater. I knew exactly what it was going in. And Yeah, definitely enjoyed it. And I thought it was inventive, and it did a lot with a genre that we've never seen before. And it just shows that a lot of these genres are inexhaustible if you do different things. Like, nobody thought to do, like, an art house slasher movie that's in the tradition of all the other slashers, but is from a different perspective, a different vibe. And it has a kill that might be one of the greatest kills of all time.
Yep.
Of all time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. Like, let's not spoiler alert what the kill is, but just that it's in there. And when you see it, you'll fucking know it.
Yep.
That was so inventive. It's the kind of thing I saw and I thought I could never have come up with something like that.
That's some Mortal Kombat shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dead ass.
Yes.
And when it first starts, I was like, okay. And then I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, we're still going.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. I really enjoyed the movie, though. It's really slow. It's really, really slow at times. But I had to keep reminding myself of this is from the POV of the slasher.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're watching Jason, you're watching and everyone's going off and they're planning on what they're going to do next and all these things. And then the scene and then Jason's there like, this is what's happening the entire time. He's right. Fucking walking, you know? Yeah. So I didn't mind it. It was a little long-winded at times, but I enjoyed it for the most part. I love that there was like no music except for like, I think that one part where it's the guy's party in the cabin or whatever.
Right.
She's got a walking mirror. I don't know, something like that. But I love that it was like just ambient, like sounds and just like really well done in that sense. But yeah, a lot of people divided on it though.
Mm-hmm. Which I get. It seems polarizing. And there are parts that are intentionally drawn out that are supposed to kind of be boring. Might not be the right word, but it's not supposed to be a thrill a minute, which I think is very much by design because it makes the kills just a little bit more exciting.
Yeah.
But having no music, no stinger sound effects, no jump scares, yes. It's unique. It's so stripped down. And I think it was a really interesting exercise in cinema in the slasher genre.
I agree.
Because it was lovingly made. You know that this person had seen like every slasher or all the major ones anyway. Yeah. You know, it's bringing something very new and different to the table, which I like.
Yeah.
You know, it was very inventive.
Well, and I like too, I like how when he gets to all the victims where it's like, again, it's like you're watching from a different perspective, but they're having the conversations as every fucking Jason movie, you know, it's
right.
Like what their plans are going to be.
Yeah.
I love at one point when he gets to there, they're, you know, you hear what their plot is going to, you know, is going to go down. But, yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun.
Really, really cool. I hope there's a sequel. Probably won't be though. Feels like a one hit.
Did you ever see Leslie Vernon? And,
Leslie Vernon.
Yeah.
No.
Behind the Mask.
That sounds so familiar. Was that a found footage?
It's like a mockumentary of the POV of a slasher.
No, I never saw. It sounds so familiar though.
Robert Englund is in it.
Oh wow.
You should definitely check it out. It's great because it's like a mockumentary. It's like kind of comedy, but it's like you get the whole perspective. Literally, this girl who's doing a documentary on the slasher. And, you know, his story and how he's setting up all the traps and everything like that.
Yeah.
That reminded me, I don't want to say of this movie because it's totally different movies. But again, it's the POV. So I would say it's worth it for that aspect too.
All right. Cool. I got to check that out.
A lot of fun. Nice. And then there's a nice twist at the end too.
Oh, okay.
They do a really good job with that. Yeah.
All right. I got to check that out.
Yeah.
Cool. You see anything else?
I saw a movie called Low Lifes. It's a Tubi original.
Oh, yes, of course.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. No, I heard of that.
It's a movie about a family of cannibals.
Right.
Pleasantly surprised of how it was one where I was getting ready for a show. I was like printing stuff. I was just getting like literally just like doing shit. And I was like, this seems like a probably pretty easy. I hadn't even heard of it. I just happened to put it on just to, you know.
Yeah.
And there's certain things where it's like, all right, there's a certain movie I want to like sit and fucking just watch. You know, and not take my eyes off. I want to catch every piece of dialogue. I want to catch every frame. And there's certain ones I'm like, well, whatever. You know, if it sucks, it sucks. If it's good, like, cool, I'll catch some parts. And I was really happy. A couple twists at the end, too. Like, just some things that kind of threw me for a loop. And, you know, it's got its problems like others. But I really like the aspect that this family that basically goes to these other people's houses to basically say that they broke down. They stay there. They kind of like earn their trust, and then like, you know, people get eaten.
Hate when that happens. All right, so Low Life's cool. Check that out. Yeah. What else? I don't have too many more. So Furiosa, not horror, but there's some horror elements in that. Yeah. There's a couple moments where I was even like, God damn. There's something involving maggots. I won't ruin it for anyone, but there's sequences that make you really squirm. It's got, first of all, I saw the whole movie thinking Chris Hemsworth was Jason Momoa. I thought it was Momoa the whole time. And the credits come up, we go, oh, right, Chris Hemsworth is in this.
Is it not like his face? Doesn't it look like him? What do you mean?
It looks like Jason Momoa. Sounds like Jason Momoa. Totally. They put a prosthetic nose and face on Chris Hemsworth. And it doesn't, like, his face doesn't exactly look like Jason Momoa, but, like, his hair and his vibe. And you're like, this is fucking Jason Momoa. But it's not. It's Chris Hemsworth. Yeah. But okay. Furiosa was awesome. But there's a few moments that are really just gross and insane. Yeah, you'll know him. There's two of them. You'll know him when you see him.
Cool.
But it's awesome. It's really
that's
awesome.
That's one I want to definitely catch in the theater. Yeah. Like that's a theater movie.
Yeah, oh, and, for sure.
And I got to carve out fucking 7 hours to watch that movie.
It's like 2.5.
Fucking long.
It's worth, like, my God, what George Miller did. He's 80 years old directing that movie.
Really?
Yo, 80.
That's badass.
Seriously badass. He's like, yeah, like William Friedkin doing movies into his 80s. And he did Killer Joe when he was in his 80s, and that's his most unhinged movie ever.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's insane.
Tell me about Killer Joe. What is that?
It's a movie with McConaughey. It's NC-17. Start there. It's the most unhinged McConaughey you've ever seen since Texas Chainsaw The Next Generation. And it's hard to describe. It's like this Southern hard-boiled, really dark, kind of in the tradition of the Coen brothers, but way darker. Gina Gershon is in it, and Emil Hirsch is in it. And yeah, it's Friedkin, did The Exorcist. He's one of the great, he's one of the goats, as far as I'm concerned, as far as directors.
I hear he's fucking nuts.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
I heard a lot of crazy stories about The Exorcist and the shit he would do on set.
There's a lot of rumors about The Exorcist and things he would do on set. I don't know if they're all true, though. There's a whole documentary on him talking about The Exorcist and the rumors.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were all these, and a lot of that was put into the media for publicity. Like they created this publicity that the set was haunted and all this shit was happening. Yep. When none of that was actually true.
Mm.
Yeah. It's good marketing though.
I did hear, and I thought this was true because I heard a podcast on it too. It's been a long time, so I really don't want to speak like too much on it, but I did hear that he carried a gun on set, a loaded gun on set.
What?
That he would fire to keep people like on their toes and like scared because.
What? Did it blanks in it?
I don't know. I think it was real.
Oh man. What movie was that?
The Exorcist.
Really?
Yeah. Unless it was a thing that he always did. At least that's what I heard.
I don't know. Well, the deal he departed, he passed fairly recently, but I heard a story from Steve Johnson. He was working. I don't remember what movie this was, but Steve was doing effects for him. And the effects were taking a really long time, and he was getting really, really angry. So he's like yelling at the effects artist, like, when is this going to be done? Like, hold on, we're almost done. Then he gets so frustrated, he comes down to the set, and he pulls his pants down, and he says to the effects artist, well, if you guys are just going to stand around and jerk off, I'm going to join you. Steve tells the story way better than I do, but yeah.
So that's awesome. I mean, yeah, he's a funny guy. Fucking hilarious.
He's one of the greatest directors. He doesn't have that many movies, but everything he's done has been incredible. Obviously, The Exorcist, The French Connection is awesome. Sorcerer is phenomenal. It's one of Tarantino's favorite movies. That's probably the most suspenseful movie I've ever seen.
Sorcerer.
And it has nothing to do with supernatural. And I don't know, really know why it's called Sorcerer. It's a remake of Wages of Fear, which is a really, really great movie. It's Roy Scheider is in it. Yeah, man, you got to see it.
I don't know what
it's
any of this
so
means.
So good. It's like diarrhea level suspense.
Ooh.
You might make sure you're, you know, whatever's are solid when you watch this.
I'll fuck with it.
It could, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Damn.
What else? Yeah, that was pretty much it.
That's about it for me. I saw one other.
No, not an important one? All right, fuck it. Cool, man. Should we do a howl?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right.
Started.
Let's move on to horror news from the past month. This is probably the biggest piece of horror news. Mike Flanagan is going to write, direct, and produce a new take on The Exorcist for Blumhouse. The fresh story is going to completely separate from 2023's The Exorcist Believer. He's going to be working with longtime collaborator Trevor Macy, who will produce under Intrepid Pictures alongside Flanagan's Red Room Pictures banner under Blumhouse. This is great news. Like, great news. I love Flanagan.
Everyone is so happy.
Yeah. This is, like, as it should be, you know? I enjoyed Believer. You know, I enjoyed it. But I think what Flanagan is going to do is going to be some next level shit.
Yeah. I really liked Believer, and I was curious to see what they were going to do next. But I was also, because the way it ended, I really liked the way it ended. Can I spoiler on
Believer? Just announce it. Just announce it.
Well, spoiler alert, right? At this point now. No, I really enjoyed it because I like how, first of all, that it was two girls.
Mm-hmm.
I like how one of them dies, and I like how she dies. I like how it's all about the dad who chimes in and basically, you know, turns on everybody because at that point he's like, fuck it. I really like that. I thought they did such a good job with that. I know some people had their gripes with it, but I enjoyed it. But I was like, well, then what do you do next? Like, that movie as a standalone,
mm-hmm.
the girl's dead, the fucking other family, they just have to deal with it, right? So I'm I'm very glad, obviously, for Mike Flanagan as it is, but I'm even more happy that we can have that one as a standalone.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, and it got so much hate, and, like, I don't know. I have become very, not forgiving, but, like, I've tried to distance myself from toxic fandom. And you just need to watch these new movies out of context of the original. You cannot compare it to the original. Lightning never strikes twice. You'll never get another Texas Chainsaw, you know, although some of the follow-ups were pretty solid.
Yeah.
However, you can't compare these movies to the originals. And it was perfectly fun.
I will say I was more surprised at how many people actually did like it. I feel like it was more split. I didn't see that many. I saw people that were complaining about it, but I was very surprised at how well received it was for the most part. Well, for some part of it. And that made me, because I was like, all right, I know I'm not crazy. And I was happy to meet the two girls at my show at Famous Monsters last year.
Oh, that's cool.
They came by. They loved my shit. I actually gave them my Mona Lisa and one of the Jasons.
They were like, oh my God, horror fans?
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I think it was one of their first shows, and they were just so sweet, and they were so cute. They were so adorable. They were having, like, the time of their lives.
Oh,
like,
that's awesome.
And I was like, if you want to take something, I was like, they were like, really? Like, they were like, and then I've learned at these shows, like, you don't go give shit to them because people got to take shit home. They don't want to take your shit home, right? But they were so excited, and they genuinely were, like, super down. So I gave them each, you know, a couple of my pieces of art, which is awesome that they have it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But yeah, super cool, man. They were just really sweet, and I thought they were both great.
They did a great job.
In the film. So, again, happy that it's over, and, like, that movie can, for myself, just be a thing versus, like, there's a second and a third one, and they fucked them up, you know? Like, you know, because it's scary, you know? Like, you know, we've had these conversations, but it's hard to really build on, I think, sequels and trilogies. And when you come out the gates planning that stuff, I think it's a little, you know, it's a little tougher too.
Yeah, definitely. I know there was a lot of challenges with the last one. There were a lot of production challenges, but I think it's in very interesting hands, and I think Flanagan's going to nail it. The only thing that I hope is I feel like not just exorcist movies, but exorcism, demonic possession movies, they all seem hesitant to get to the level of extremity that The Exorcist went. And there are moments in The Exorcist that are so extreme that nobody's ever come close or even tried. I hope these next ones go there. Not try to top it necessarily, but, like, go that dark and that fucking insane.
Well, we're in a different time too. So we've been desensitized by a lot. It takes a lot to... Even for myself, but I'm sure I can have a blanketed statement. I'm sure a lot of people feel this way. It takes a lot to really, like, see something different now. We've seen so many movies over the years. There's a reason why In a Violent Nature, that kill is like, holy shit. There's a reason why Terrifier 2 was a different level than Terrifier 1. Like, you have to, and again, it's not just about topping it, right? It's not like just doing it for the sake of doing it. There's thought that goes into it. There's passion that's into it.
Yeah.
And I think for this, and I agree with what you're saying for the possession movies, we haven't seen anything really different. I think the Last Exorcism was probably the one I really liked the most. It was like the documentary one with the little girl. I enjoyed that. We could talk about that separately. But that to me was a different take on it because it was documentary style. There's some lore in it that comes back in the end, and there's some pretty like fucking creepy scenes in it that I was like, whoa. But other than that, like it's really hard because we've seen it all. So
yeah.
What is the next level again without like just topping it? But like,
yeah,
you know,
cause it's literally the devil, you know, you gotta get dark, man.
Like, right. Like yeah. It, you know, like you can literally do whatever you want because the devil could do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
You know, you can take it that far and something could be really fucked up and be like, well, you need some Jesus in your life. You know what I'm saying?
In other news, Mike Flanagan also joins Chris Stuckman's Shelby Oaks, which I actually worked on that movie.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever watch Chris Stuckman's videos?
Mm-mm.
Oh, they're great.
School me.
He's a film critic. He's Rotten Tomatoes critic, but he also has these really, really good videos. And I find like I have a semi-similar sensibility to him. He's into like anime and shit that I'm not into. But when it comes to like other movies and horror and stuff like that, I find his recommendations are really solid and he gives you a really good sense of what the movie is, what to expect. Yeah. And he also will go back. He does these Halloween videos that I always look forward to where he pulls these like old deep cuts and classics and he just reopens them and talks about them and really articulate. And yeah. And this was I haven't seen a cut of the movie, but what I've witnessed on set and reading the script, it's from Paper Street Productions and Aaron Kuntz, my friend, who's also the producer on this. I think it's going to be a really awesome movie. And Mike Flanagan jumped on board this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they kickstarted it, raised a ton of money on Kickstarter. I think they were set out to raise like 300 grand and they raised like a million. I might be getting the numbers a little off, but it was like that. Yeah, it was a lot. So that's super exciting news that he's jumping on Shelby Oaks. So hell look yeah. out for that. What else we got? Paul Giamatti to star in a hostile TV series for Eli Roth, described as a modern adaptation and an elevated thriller in the series. The development does not yet have a platform. I'm psyched about this.
Do we know more?
No.
Okay.
That's all we know. Eli Roth's involved. Paul Giamatti is going to star in it.
I will watch anything with Paul Giamatti in it.
Yeah?
I think his range in act is phenomenal. I think there's so much. He can do so many different things, and he has.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just certain people that I'm like, I don't want to say that they won't do a bad movie because, you know, it happens, right? But
yeah.
Like Leonardo DiCaprio is another one that I would like. Any movie, I'll just fucking watch it. Paul Giamatti for me is like,
yeah,
I want to see what he's going to do, you know? And this sounds interesting.
I think Megan Thee Stallion should write a song about him. Go Giamatti, yaddy, 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 yaddy. I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry.
That was terrible.
I've been looking for a place to plug that.
Maze.
Yeah.
Maze.
No, but I love the first two Hostel movies are fantastic. Fantastic. I want more of that world. It's like the most brutal we've ever seen Eli Roth be. And it Hostel 2, I don't know how they got away with what they got away with.
I haven't seen the second one.
Oh, you got to see it.
It's worth watching.
Oh, it's totally worth watching. It's Eli Roth directed that one too. It's great.
I like that shit. The idea behind them is awesome because if you've ever traveled internationally,
yeah,
there's something scary about like going somewhere and like if you end up in the wrong place, dude, if you fucking disappear, it's going to take a really long time for anyone to even fucking notice you were gone.
100%. Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, TV series, I am looking forward to because I wanted more Hostel movies. The third one is not good. I don't think it had anything to do with it. I remember watching it. I was like, it kind of has the energy of like when you were a kid and you loved The Lion King and then, Lion King 2 comes out and it's straight to video. And even as a kid and your cinematic sensibility is still underdeveloped, you still know, there's something about this that's just off and sucks. No offense to those involved, but yeah, Hostel 3 had Lion King 2 energy. Not a fan, but the first two I love. I rewatched them. They're so good. But yeah, this TV series should be awesome.
Awesome.
What else we got? Diablo Cody producing Death of a Pop Star movie from the writer of Cam. This is a webcomic adaptation to be written by Issa Mazzi with a story following a pop star, Sophie, who after dying and waking up in hell is given a second chance on Earth by the Grim Reaper, her biggest fan. Should be interesting. I loved Cam.
I didn't see Cam
a lot. It's good. Stephen King even loved Cam.
When I read this in the howl, I was thinking what got me at the end was her biggest fan. I thought that was so fucking cool. Because up to it, I was like, okay, this sounds like a lot of other things, but it sounds, with that,
yeah, it sounds like fun.
That immediately turned into like, oh, this sounds like it'd be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Diablo Cody wrote Lisa Frankenstein, so this might have
a
similar vibe. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, or maybe the same universe. Who knows? Blumhouse is bringing the My Bloody Valentine franchise back to life. The new installment promises to reignite the horror of Harry Warden. Plot and director details have not been revealed. Great.
I'm embarrassed to say I've never seen any of them.
Me too.
Upset. There's an older one, right? From like the 70s?
Yeah. Yeah. There's an old one. And then they did a remake. Then I think they did a sequel to the remake. Yeah. But no, it should be interesting. Maybe we should see the other ones by next week.
It's very rare we get a moment Nick Taylor has not seen.
I know. I'm a little embarrassed by that one. That's a classic. Yeah. Wow. But you made me feel better about it. So
I'm a terrible bar to have. So we should feel terrible.
Yeah. Now maybe we'll both watch it by next week. Yeah. See
maybe
what we think.
Maybe next Valentine's.
Oh yeah, that works. That works. Dexter Original Sin. Christian Slater is starring in a prequel Dexter series. Slater plays Dexter's father, Harry Morgan. The series will explore Dexter's early years in 1991 Miami, from student to avenging serial killer. No release date announced. That sounds cool. I was a huge fan of Dexter.
Yeah.
Did you watch Dexter?
I did, but I stopped after the season after the Trinity Killer is when I stopped.
Okay, good. Good. Don't go any further.
I've heard.
The Trinity Killer is one of the best seasons of television ever. I was fucking audibly shocked at the ending. I'm not going to ruin it for anyone, but it tore my guts out. I think I cried.
I probably did too.
Yeah.
I was fucked up.
That was
in the tub.
So
I can still remember.
I remembered too.
I was at my dad's house. I remember.
I gasped audibly. Yeah. And I talked to my mom later. She's like, what's wrong? I was like, you don't want to know. This I'll say about Dexter. It was, every season I was surprised at how it was able to keep the concept fresh for the most part. And then it kind of dulled down a little bit. And then the last season, the first three episodes, I was on the fence about watching the last season. The first three episodes were fantastic. And I was like, I knew it was the last season. It was going in an incredible direction. He had a protege. He had a young kid who he was tutoring and showing the kind of ways of the Force, and to use a Jedi reference, and the code. And he had this maternal figure, finally, who understood him, who was a therapist who his father consulted with when they were kind of engineering him and putting his homicidal tendencies to good use. So he had a mother, finally, who understood him. So a mom and a protege, he's starting to kind of find his way. And then I don't know what happened. I don't know if they switched writers. It takes such a hard, stupid left turn. Like the final season of Dexter, not counting, they did a season about 2 years ago where they brought it back for a season. Mixed feelings about that too. But it was the most promising series finale, but it just got so preposterous. And I was like insulted by how bad it was. It was so bad. So yeah, you're right for, you know, not watching anymore.
Wow.
And then the Dexter, I don't know what it was called, like Dexter Cold Blood or something, where it was like him now. I enjoyed that. I didn't like the ending. I'm not going to ruin the ending for anyone, but I didn't think they had to do what they did to the ending.
Right.
But this I'm excited about. I love the idea. I read a couple of the books. The books are cool.
Well, I was going to say, I'm curious because I know there's a bunch of books and I don't think any of them are any prequel kind of story.
I don't think so. I think they allude to him being younger, but I don't think there's a
prequel. Yeah, well, I remember in the first season, you get a lot of Dexter's perspective on even he knows that he's not, you know, normal, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I just feel like, do we need a prequel? You know, like, do we need to do this again?
Christian Slater. I love Christian Slater.
I do too. In the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's still really cool now to me. Yeah. I don't know. I have high hopes for it. High hopes. The books are cool. In the books, he's a psychopath. Like there's no redeemable qualities in the book. He's just a pure psychopath.
I've heard they're like brutal.
Yeah,
I've heard
they're brutal. Like, I read three of them.
Yeah, I've heard some of them are like really, really fucking bad. Like crazy
I
want to
read more
shit.
Of them. Yeah, it gets pretty rough.
I have the first one. I never read it though. It's been sitting in my collection since honestly like college.
Yeah, first one's good. Second one's better. Third one's good. Yeah, they're pretty solid.
I saw a breakdown not that long ago. And actually, when I was Googling from after looking at The Howl, someone had listed their favorite books, and it was like, this is great. This is really fucked up. This is really fucked up. This is pretty good. This was
all
not
the Dexter
great.
Books.
Like, yeah.
Oh,
and
that's cool.
It was pretty cool. Like none of them really seemed like they were bad, except for maybe one, and then another was like kind of okay. But the rest were like, these are really good, and they're really fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. No, I love that series. It's very close to my heart. So I am excited to see what they do with it. 1313. James Wan is producing a dark reimagining of the Munsters for Universal. That's pretty awesome news.
How do you feel about that?
I'm very excited. Mm. I think James Wan can do no wrong. I love his bonkers sensibility. I loved Malignant, which was basically like a big budgeted remake of Basket Case. But I loved Malignant. I thought it was so awesome. And it was so fun to see him unhinged doing exactly the movie that he wanted to do. I think what he'll do with the Munsters will be interesting. And it's going to be part of the Universal Monsterverse.
Oh.
Yeah.
As part of the actual, all the, everything we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah.
The reimagining of
yeah.
all these, like the Invisible Man mm-hmm. and all that.
I don't know if it's going to connect to like the Blumhouse mm. Invisible Man or how all, or right, like right. You know, how that's all going to factor in with Renfield and all of that, but. I don't know if they're all connected, but it's going to be part of the Monsterverse. So that'll be interesting.
I'm curious. I mean, I'm interested because I'm all for a dark, you know, reimagining. But that was never the essence of the show.
Yeah,
which is fine. I love the show. I grew up watching that with like my dad.
Yeah, I love that show.
The Rob Zombie movie.
Do we? I thought we don't talk about this. I thought we decided to never speak of this again.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I don't know, like, it was beautifully shot.
It still
I think
hurts.
We kind of talked about it, but it was like really upsetting to watch. I feel like they nailed the actual essence and it's just really, it's just terrible.
Yeah.
Terribly executed, but it looked really cool. So I don't know. I'm really curious. And on the Malignant front, that was a very divisive movie and I'm on the other side. I just did not.
You didn't like it? How many times have you seen it?
I've watched it 3 times.
Okay.
That's so, an honest, right. like right. I tried because I'm like, Again, it was just very, like, either you liked it or you didn't, and I wanted to like it because I knew so many people did, and I'm usually on the fence of, like, when it's split like that, I usually probably do. I don't know. We just didn't. But I do love James Wan, and I do trust him. So, let's see. Let's just see.
I mean, it should be interesting. Yeah. The Robots Go Crazy, new movie from Radio Silence. It's an action comedy for Amazon and MGM Studios, starring Andy Samberg. Film promises a blend of humor and action with plot details still under wraps. Hey, man, anything Radio Silence is doing, I will be there opening night. So I hope it has a theatrical. It probably will.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I love Andy Samberg, too, so I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Like, him alone, I could just look at him and laugh. Like, that's, you know, so if it's a horror comedy.
Let's go.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I'll watch it.
Yeah. The Looming, A24, and Talk to Me producers are teaming up on a feature adaptation of Sundance horror short. Masha Koh's short, The Looming, follows a man whose virtual home assistant picks up a strange noise, leading to a terrifying discovery. I haven't seen that short. I need to check that short out.
No, no idea.
I want to see what's getting adapted. Keeper, Tatiana Maslany, starring in the next horror movie from the director of Longlegs. Plot follows a couple's anniversary trip that turns nightmarish when an unspeakable evil reveals the cabin's dark secrets. I haven't seen. I'm psyched for Long Legs. Psyched for Long Legs.
I'll fuck with it.
Yeah,
it
doesn't I'll bet you will. Let the Evil Go West. Sebastian Stan and Lily James reteam on new horror from Speak No Evil director. The story involves a railroad worker encountering horrifying visions.
Okay. So, did you see Speak No Evil?
Yeah, the original?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you like it?
It's really upsetting.
I love the ending.
Yeah?
The ending's so good. Because that family got everything they fucking deserved.
Mm.
I'm sorry. There were so many times that they should have left. It was one of those things. And there is a point where they try to. And they come back. They just get... I mean, it's the point of the movie. But I remember my wife and I were talking about it, and it's just... There are people like that, that just... They have no backbone. They can easily be persuaded. And in a situation like that, I could see people being manipulated enough to kind of just like, you kind of just go with it and go with it and go with it and just,
right.
You know, we're gonna leave soon. We'll be out of here in no time kind of deal. But I was like halfway through the movie, I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? Just fucking go.
Right.
But that's why I really enjoy the ending because they...
Yeah, they deserve as far as you're concerned. Well, I do think that's an important thing with horror movies is to show how psychologically vulnerable real regular people are. It's one thing to see a movie where like there's a slasher in the house and they go up the stairs instead of out the front door. And it's just like real people don't do that. But if you're watching real people acting stupid in ways that real people actually do act stupid, because of our psychological people-pleasing bullshit, I think it's important for horror to showcase, like, hey, we all got these blind spots that can lead to very awful situations. Like, that's horror doing its purpose, you know, which is scare people straight, you know?
And I think in this case, too, they're also traveling to a different country.
Right.
So it's back to kind of that hostile thing, at least in my eyes, of like, you're in a different place. Like, you don't know where the fuck you're at. You're staying with these people you don't know.
Trust no one.
And And the remake, I was like, well, but why? But I saw the trailer the other day. It actually doesn't look terrible.
No, it's good.
James McAvoy is in it, too. Which yeah, like, I'll he's chilling. With it. Yeah. He looks good. Like, it looks like, you know, so I'm actually curious to see what they do with it.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. Coralie Fargia's new movie, The Substance, acquired by Mubi, the body horror film stars Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley and explores themes of identity and transformation with a dark, surreal twist. Did you see Revenge?
No.
Oh, it's really, really good. Yeah, Coralie Fargia put that out. She was on my podcast. And it's on Shudder. Just it's a rape and a revenge movie.
Yeah,
I think it's the first one directed by a woman, which is surprising. Hmm. I think. But anyway, yeah, classic rape and revenge movie, but different. Definitely has more polish, a little more depth to it than some of the other ones. But yeah, she's a great director, so I'm psyched that she's got such a killer cast: Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. Yeah, it's gonna be good.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, Grotesquerie. Travis Kelce stars in Ryan Murphy's new horror series, co-starring Niecy Nash Betts and Courtney B. Vance. Series promises to deliver Murphy's signature blend of horror and drama. Yeah, I love Ryan Murphy's approach to horror.
I mean, everyone's riding the fucking Travis Kelce train. Very curious. This is interesting. And Ryan Murphy, I mean, I'll always give him a chance. I think he has enough solid of a reputation for putting out fucking some real bangers. So
yeah, that should be interesting. I liked Ratchet. Did you see Ratchet on Netflix?
No, but
I didn't finish it, but I saw like 5 episodes. I was very intrigued.
I wanted to, and then I didn't know till we talked about it recently. I don't think I talked about it for the podcast, but I had never seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's.
Oh, really?
Until
that's
really
one of my favorite
like, a few
movies.
Months ago. So actually, probably the end of the year. And then I learned that's where she's based off of. So I still want to go back and watch it now that I have a little bit more context.
I don't think they're really connected.
Or maybe not connected, but it's supposed to be the same
person.
It's the
same, yeah.
So it was a little bit more intriguing.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, definitely. No, I love that movie, though. The Carpenter's Son, Nicolas Cage and FKA Twigs, starring in a Jesus-based horror movie. Story involves a boy, Jesus, with divine powers becoming the target of horrors based on the infancy gospel of Thomas. What do you think about that?
Cool. Nicolas Cage is...
Who's he going to be, Joseph?
Been on a fucking tear. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting, but yeah, I don't know anything about the infancy gospel of Thomas. We got to look that up for next episode.
I'm not up to date on my Bible.
Okay.
But no, I'd be curious, and I don't know. You know my displeasure for Nicolas Cage, but he has been putting out some really good movies the last couple of years.
Well, you know my fandom. Go strong with Nicolas Cage. Yeah. Now this should be interesting. I feel like there's not been like a Jesus-centric horror movie, and there's probably some shit in the Bible that really lends itself to a horror movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll fuck with it.
Speaking of biblical stories, the Pope's Exorcist sequel is announced. Producer Jeff Katz confirmed Russell Crowe is returning in this follow-up to the box office hit that grossed $76.9 million. Not to be confused with the Exorcism. Also starring Russell Crowe, which has nothing to do with any of this. He's definitely riding the exorcism train. But I like the last one. Pope's Exorcist, the first one was fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's like The Exorcist meets Indiana Jones in a way.
Yeah. And it was cool because I went through this rabbit hole after watching the first time just to learn more about Father Gabriel.
Oh, it's a real guy? It's based on a real guy?
Yeah. The chief exorcist of the Vatican. Literally, yeah.
I didn't know that.
He actually performed over 160,000 exorcisms.
160,000?
And apparently there weren't very many that were nearly as intense as what they're trying to portray. No, you can see there are videos of him. Like, he passed away, I don't think, not that long ago. Probably maybe 10 years within the past 10 years.
It's 160,000?
That's what they said.
Whoa.
The internet be lying, though. But no, apparently... it's attributed to, it's not like they're all like these demonic possessions. Some, what I had read was 100 or so were actual like demonic possession.
The rest of them are like,
it's like, it's probably more like houses and things like that. Or just like, it's a little bit more fluff, I guess. But
seafood allergy makes you act weird. I don't know.
But I don't know. Apparently it, you know, the way they portray him, I remember reading a whole article that like in that movie, like it's not really, it's Hollywood, obviously.
Well, yeah.
So there's a part of it where it's like, he didn't do all that shit, but some of it, apparently his approach, his comedic approach was a real thing where he would kind of fuck with the demons and fuck with the devils. Like he just like, he kind of didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. That'll be fun. This is good news. Makeup effects legend Tom Savini will appear in Terrifier 3. All right. I feel like he belongs in that movie. You know, I think he really inspired Damien Leone a lot, being the kind of maestro of gore. And something feels very right about that decision to me. So, yeah, I'll be excited. And he's a good actor. Sex Machine and From Dusk Till Dawn. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And I got to meet him at Famous Monsters last year.
Oh, yeah?
I saw him every single morning walk by. And yeah, I mean, he's
bro, he's jacked. Fine.
Yeah,
he's like in his 70s and he looks incredible.
Yeah, he's mad old, but he looks great. And yeah, but really, really nice guy. And I'm curious to see what his role is going to be in the movie. I actually saw today Damien Leone posted they racked on all their special effects.
Oh, sweet.
Today. So,
oh, that'll be great. Yeah, yeah, can't wait. That movie's around the corner, bro.
October.
Yeah, man.
And actually, they had seen, they had mentioned. I saw either today or yesterday. And now we both worked in marketing. We've both worked in PR. So I think some of it's also PR stuff. But apparently David Howard Thornton had vomited and gotten really sick on set of how gross some of these scenes were.
No way. Being.
So
really?
A little bit of a, yeah.
That guy vomited?
Yeah. I think it's a little PR move, but,
oh,
but they also announced today, here's some news for you. He's going to be playing, I guess, Mickey Mouse in the Steamboat Willie horror movie, Screamboat.
Oh, no way. My God. I've been turning a blind eye to all of these, like, Winnie the Pooh blood and
the
honey.
Public domain.
All the public domain stuff. Part of me doesn't take it seriously.
Dude, do not watch Blood and Honey. Sorry, I will be a hater on this one in the sense of it's so bad that it's not good. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
it's not so bad, it's good.
It was so bad. Not like not even enjoyable. Right. Like,
Is that the sequel or is that the first one?
That's the first. They're coming out with a second one.
I thought the second one dropped.
Actually, I think I already did. Definitely didn't bother giving it my time. The way it started, the first one, I actually thought it was going to be really cool. The way they set up the lore, I was like, oh, this is cool. And then they completely changed the direction where I thought it was going to go. I was like, why wouldn't you? You had such a really cool fucking idea here.
Oh, man.
It could have been cool. But anyway, so yeah, Screamboat. Screamboat Willie.
Well, that's a good choice. That makes me intrigued to see it because he's a great physical performer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Onslaught, The Guest, and Your Next Duo, reteaming for A24 action thriller. And that is director Adam Wingard and writer Simon Barrett. I loved Your Next. I think that's one of the better films in the past 10
really?
Years, honestly.
I've never seen either of them.
It's and brutal.
I'm not exaggerating. I think Your Next has probably been in my queue for like 10 years.
Oh, you got to see
like,
it.
It's just... It's got the pig on the front, right?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, whatever.
It's really good. Just nasty, mean, but really fun movie. Yeah. And it's technically a home invasion, kind of a reverse home invasion. Not really reverse. It's a home invasion movie, I think. Yeah. It's a vibe of a home invasion movie. But you got to see it. Yeah. It's got a great ending.
Did you see The Guest, the other one?
Yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, too.
Okay.
Flesh of the Gods, Kristen Stewart and Oscar Isaac starring an 80s vampire movie from Panos Cosmatos. Psyched about that. I love 80s vampire movies. I can never decide which I like more, Fright Night or Lost Boys. I feel like I love them equally. You know, it's the East Coast, West Coast vampire thing, but I feel like we haven't had like a good 80s style vampire movie, and maybe this will be in that vibe, but Panos Cosmatos, anything he does, you know, I'll check out.
What I looked him up. He did Mandy, right?
Nope. Oh, wait, yes. Oh, Jesus. I just got him confused with Yorgos Lanthimos. Oh, Jesus.
It's the only reason why.
I'm getting these complex Greek names mixed up. Okay, yes. It's the guy who did Mandy.
Because you really liked Mandy.
Loved Mandy.
I didn't like Mandy.
You didn't like Mandy.
Nah.
But, I loved Mandy.
But it looked really cool. And as a director, if that's the role that he's playing, if it's, like, again, I think about the film itself, but, like, I could see that being pretty cool. Love the style, the vibe of the 80s vampires that we're talking about.
Yeah. So you didn't like Mandy. Did you imbibe any cannabis the night that you saw it?
Probably. Should not have?
No, you should have.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even a cannabis fan. I was like, for this movie. Probably. The second viewing, I'm like, I think like a little.
And that's another one I watched at least twice because I know a lot of people really liked it. And it just kind of didn't do it.
Didn't do it for him.
No, but this sounds really cool. I love the idea of the 80s vampires, and I've been such on like a What We Do in the Shadows kick. And
yeah,
I want to see more of this kind of stuff.
Nice. Yeah. No, it should be cool. All right. That is The Howl. Shall we play Did You Know?
Let's play.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah. We talked about William Friedkin earlier. We talked about The Exorcist.
Right.
I feel like I heard this a long time ago, but I never actually dove into it. Did you know that there's a real life serial killer in The Exorcist?
Like there's an actual serial killer that appears on camera?
Yes, sir.
No, I didn't know that.
So Paul Bateson, he's one of the people that is when Regan's going into the hospital to get all her procedures done.
Yeah.
He's one of the people like there. He was a serial killer and got caught. So,
whoa.
An American convicted serial killer and former radiographer. So he appears as a radiologic technologist in the scene. And I think he actually has some lines where he's like comforting her and like, you know, to make sure she's okay. So apparently William Friedkin, I guess when he was doing research for the movie, he went and saw him perform. He saw a performance of a cerebral angiography the previous year. And I guess he saw him and saw how well he did and offered him a spot as being an extra in the film.
Oh, well.
He killed at least six people.
God
damn. And this is in New York. They found at least six men that were discovered in the Hudson River. And a lot of their murders were basically remained unsolved because they couldn't really... I think the way they were able to prove was that there were phone calls, apparently. I don't remember all the facts. There were phone calls that happened. He was on record. And then it kind of matched up with how the bodies were disposed that like someone in the medical field knew what they were doing.
Right.
It kind of just were like all the things kind of hit at once. But yeah, apparently he murdered at least six people.
God damn. Oh, that's insane. I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
There's a lot of shit that went down on that set too that were just like haunting, but that one is like.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Pretty fucked up.
Ooh.
Yeah, but apparently, I read some like quotes and stuff, and it's just apparently like the nicest guy. People would have never thought, people that went to school with him, like all these things that happened.
That's the scary thing
like,
about a lot of serial killers.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight.
Yes.
Yeah.
And apparently he was actually really brilliant in all the stuff he did and.
Yeah, it's scary. They're everywhere. I hate to say it. And there's a lot of latent ones who, like, haven't killed but are capable of it, but they're, like, everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah. Not to get too dark, but, all right.
That's what we do.
Did you know? Well, first of all, let me preface with Walt Disney, when he first got Disney off the ground and he first started making money, he bought his first house and he had his parents come stay at his house. And there was a carbon monoxide leak unbeknownst to him. And he left and he had like meetings all day or something. Or he was away for a weekend and he came back and his parents were dead in his house.
Oh.
Yeah. And he was young. He was like in his early 30s, I think.
I didn't know that.
Ever since that happened, did you know that the reason why all the parents in every Disney movie are either single or you see a parent die is because of that? So when you look back, now that you like have seen the fabric of the Matrix, you're going to look back at every Disney movie and go, wait a minute, Andy in Toy Story, there's no father.
That's the first thing my mind went to.
Yeah. Jasmine, no mother in Aladdin. Mufasa dies in The Lion King. The list goes on. Ariel in The Little Mermaid, there's no mother. It's all of them.
Oh,
it's literally all of them. And that's why.
Before.
That's why.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty spooky, but now it's legit.
Damn, you changed that forever for me. I can never look at a Disney movie now without seeing that.
Yeah, that's very real. Yeah.
Dark.
I know. Shall we play Blood and Banter?
Oof.
Jeez.
Yeah.
You need a minute to get over that?
No, it's just heavy. damn, yeah. It's fucked up. That's really traumatic. That's really shitty.
Mm-hmm. Finding Nemo, mom dies. It's like it never, it's every, all of them. It's all of them. The only one is the Incredibles. Luckily, everybody's intact and okay. You know? Yeah. For now. I think that's the only one for now.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a simple one to start us off, a softball. What is your favorite movie time snack?
I mean, popcorn's easy, but I've leveled up my popcorn game to like include the M&Ms or Bunch of Crunch.
Word.
Because you got to mix the salty and sweet, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my shit.
Nice. I like to do popcorn with truffle oil on top of it and then like pink sea salt on top of that.
That's really
fancy.
That's
pants.
Really bougie,
yeah,
man.
That's good.
You bring your own? Where you get the fucking truffle oil
from? I just get it from, you can get it from like D'Agostino. You can get it from like any grocery store has
it. I know that. No, but so you bring it with you to the...
Oh, I don't bring it to
thinking,
the movie theater.
I'm thinking the theater. Okay.
No, I mean at home. I should bring him to the theater, though. I'm not above that.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I would easily do that.
Like, what theater are you going to that's got truffle oil to add to your fucking popcorn?
Oh, I wish. That would be
pretty
badass.
Can you layer that shit, too, please? For
yeah,
me?
Alamo Draft House. I think they do that, actually. I think Alamo.
Look at that. I know
they
some
do,
them,
like, flavored popcorn.
I know some of them have
do.
Flavored. Yep. They have, like, the Cheetos ones. They have, like, Oreo ones now that I've seen.
What?
And then some of the places you go, they have, like, the fucking powders and stuff you can add your own like flavors.
I wouldn't
too,
fuck with no powders. Keep your powder out of my goddamn popcorn. Yeah.
Anyway, truffle oil. So yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh yeah, your turn.
Oh. If you could watch a spooky movie anywhere in the world, where would it be and what would you see?
Oh, man. Probably Nosferatu in the original castle they filmed it at, which I don't know where that is. Mm-hmm. I think Germany or something.
I think it is Germany.
Yeah. Yeah, F.W. Murnau was German. So it's got to be Germany.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you know when they used to do, so back in the day when those silent films, it kind of goes without saying, but I never thought about it because I saw last Halloween. At the art house theater by us, they did a screening of Nosferatu with a live organist.
Oh, that's cool.
So apparently all those movies, those silent films, they came with like basically like sheet music.
Right.
So anytime that those films were showed, like you, someone was live, like it kind of goes without saying, but I never thought about that. And I was like,
you never think about that. Yeah, it's a live score.
Yeah, like always live. Because
they didn't have sound.
Yeah, which I thought was really cool. But not just that, but the fact that like they basically had a soundtrack and you had to follow it and you had to know the pacing of the film and all that stuff too.
That'd be a cool documentary because they must have had to find local musicians who could do it, who could actually like keep up with the score.
Yeah,
it's pretty fascinating when you think about it. And I'm sure some theaters are like, fuck it, we're just going to play it silently.
Probably. But it was pretty cool. It was cool to experience that too.
That's cool. What would be your weapon of choice in the zombie apocalypse?
I'm going to go with the crossbow.
Crossbow?
For range, for the most part, you know, silence.
Yeah.
And you could still retrieve your arrows afterwards if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's a good one.
I like that one a lot. Daryl Dixon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gotta go for Daryl. I like concrete saws for zombies.
Mm.
They're a little better. They're a little more powerful than chainsaws. Maneuverability. You can just get through a lot of them.
Can you get a cordless?
That's a good question. What? I don't know. I mean, that fucks my whole argument up, doesn't it?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Just maybe.
Yeah.
How would you want to die in a horror movie?
Oh, man, that's such a good question. I would want to be killed by Art the Clown.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's as far as I've come. Something fucking bloody. I've always wanted a perfectly rendered severed head of me, like my own. Because I was on set of a movie and they had this girl and they made a severed head and it was so good. It cost like $18,000 to make it. Her teeth were cast. Her teeth were perfect. It was so insane. And they didn't let her keep it. I was like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
It's like you hope that she gets beheaded in another movie or use it for a prop. How awesome would it be to have that, mail it to your mom?
You should.
And videotape that. It'd be like a fun Instagram video, you know?
Well, I've thought too in Hereditary, like who has Charlie's head?
That's probably from a project in Planet Hollywood somewhere. There should be a horror Planet Hollywood. That would be awesome.
Is there not?
I don't think so.
Delete this so we can make that.
Yeah, you're right.
That's my idea.
Cool. So how would you like to die on camera?
I don't know. I've had beheading too, but I think a really fun and interesting one would be, did you ever see Hatchet 2?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when Victor Crowley kills Tony Todd as a Reverend Zombie? He like pulls his skeleton out of his mouth or his ass or some shit. Like, dude, he rips.
Speaking of Mortal Kombat shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was an amazing kill. That's like, I'll fuck with that.
That's a good kill. Yeah.
Do that to me.
Maybe shark attack or like alligator attack. I like animal attacks in movies. That would be a good one. Yeah. Cool. Cool, man. We did it.
All right, sir.
All right. Hell, four in the bag.
Till next time.
Till next time.
Thank you, as always, for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, why not share it with your friends and family on social media? Don't forget to follow the show at my new Instagram and TikTok channels, at Nick Taylor Horror Show. That's at Nick Taylor Horror Show. Thanks again for listening to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. We scare because we care.